excited.
By the way, the new Assassin's Creed is set in ancient Greece, and it is looking fine.
It is looking amazing. I want to play it.
The new Assassin's Creed.
Oh, I heard.
Is in ancient Greece, and your best friend is Socrates, and you have to like have philosophical debates with
Socrates.
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 Did you catch any of the sound bites though? Like it's accents, but not like the typical like. Oh, they're going to speak with British accents kind of thing. They're like...
It's all Greek
accents. True blue Greek accents.
Are you sure it's not like the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy?
Uncle Mario!
Ezio!
Ezio! Welcome to a new episode of Why Did We Watch This? This is a mini episode. On the full episodes, it'll be a bunch of friends sitting down with a bad movie and a cocktail, but this is just us sitting down with a little discussion today. But before we get to that discussion, I am Chris Revelle.
I'm Leah Delahanty.
I'm the third one.
Brendan Drishman.
Brendan.
Great. And we also would like to announce the next movie we're doing. Last time was Cellular, but next time is going to be Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Well, two times before that, Chris.
Two times before that was... Was it Fae Grim?
Yeah. Earth Girls Are Easy.
Earth Girls Are Easy,
what
shit.
What was 14 times before that?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Probably episode one.
I don't know. We've done like...
20? 5? 25?
Like movie episodes?
We've done over 2 years.
Yeah. We have like, I don't know, it's a lot. It's more than you think, Dad.
Closer to 30, I guess. Anyway, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, a movie that we all saw in theaters together.
Yeah.
Starring
best friends should.
Dane DeHaan.
Dane DeHaan, I think.
Oh, is it? Okay, fine.
Dane DeHaan,
Cara Delevingne, Clive Owen, and Rihanna. And also Ethan Hawke for like 2 seconds.
Charlie the Pimp.
I also want to point out this movie ranks as the most expensive non-American and the most expensive independent movie ever made.
Good for it.
And I'm sure it recouped its budget handsomely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was not at all like flushing money down the bidet.
This is, in fact, the movie that came so close to bankrupting Luc Besson, the director.
You just put the money in the bidet.
A geyser of money.
Zip money is everywhere.
No, but it came so...
Ah, Luc Besson, you genius. You have done it again.
It apparently came so close to bankrupting him, he had to make a sequel to a movie he didn't want to make again, just to recoup the losses.
Did the studio go bankrupt or something?
It almost did.
The studio did, too.
They're so close that apparently he has to make a sequel to Lucy, which was his last profitable film.
That's going to be great.
Yeah. She finds out that she's using 110% of her brain.
Exactly. Well, the crazy thing about that is, at the end of Lucy, she literally turns into an office chair. I don't know where you go after that, really.
Yeah. She turned to a nicer office chair.
like one with thicker leather padding.
You mean, like a reclining, a vibrating thing in this? There's options, is what I'm saying.
It goes lower and it goes higher.
Chris, maybe you need to get on this movie with Luc Besson and give me some suggestions.
I'm like, listen, Lukey, we have some notes for you. We have a treatment ready to go. But anywho, what is the cocktail we're going to be pairing with this movie?
Well, Christopher, the cocktail we're pairing with this movie is going to be called a Magellan Currant Mojito. It's going to be some crushed ice, frozen cherries, frozen blueberries, mint leaves, lime simple syrup, lime juice, and some citrus rum. I don't know what kind of citrus rum. I'm kind of hoping lime.
Wait a sec. Did we not come up with a Valerian-centric name for this cocktail?
Magellan Currant Mojito.
I don't know what that is. I don't remember
the Magellan Currant being a thing.
They say in the beginning, yes.
Oh, okay.
You have to... Chris, you must trust that I will do my job.
I believe you.
I don't remember the movie.
They say in the beginning, it's, I think Rutger Hauer is saying something.
Why wasn't it Dane DeHaan's Wall of Girlfriends?
The playlist?
I don't know, maybe we'll make a snack or something for it.
We could have a whole spread of different orders we'll call the playlist.
In the shapes of women.
And boobs.
Yes. Anyways, it's going to be like a slushy mojito thing. So yeah. It's going to be nice and icy because it's going to be probably very hot when we get around recording.
And yep. We'll serve we'll make it look nice and sci-fi.
Yep.
Nice and fancy-like. Yeah.
All right, that's that.
We have a little discussion for this episode as well. Recently...
The first episode of Why Did We Play This?
Yeah.
Quite literally. I mean, so recently Lee purchased... A video game.
Yeah, so I think it's a good, if you don't mind.
Oh, please, go right ahead.
So I feel like this is a good time to do this, not only because of the game, but because on the eve of us doing a movie by famous off-the-wall mad genius Luc Besson,
yeah.
I thought we'd do a review of a video game by, but the, basically the video game equivalent of an off-the-wall mad genius who's off his rocker and needs to be stopped, David Cage.
Well, I also think it's especially appropriate because a lot of David Cage's mission appears to be to make video games as cinematic as humanly possible.
Yeah, and he also likes, he's also at that forefront of like video games are art, but then he proceeds to make really trash games.
That look
great.
Incredible.
By the way, but they're just like, he's just not the guy you want in your corner for that argument.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so the game I'm referring to was, of course, Detroit Become Human for PS4.
Mm-hmm.
It came out May 25th. Is that when it came out?
I think so.
I got it. Like, yeah, we played it like that weekend. And I played every one of his games except for, I did not play Beyond.
Did you play Omicron?
No, but who's played that? I played two of his games before this. But they were the big ones. I played Antico Prophecy and I played Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
I think I was missing a console that was functioning or something. My PS3 broke, or it was PS4, and I didn't have a PS4 yet for Beyond.
Mm-hmm. I did play Beyond, so yeah. I have some experience with that one.
So, yeah, like his games are all sort of the same thing, where it's like a loosely interactive movie. You usually play as more than one character. The gameplay is like, again, not terribly engaging. It's a mixture of like mundane, like no stakes, like move the controller up to brush your teeth.
They're
like
very elaborate QuickTime events.
Well, there's sort of like two modes. So there's the mode of QuickTime events where it's like a car chase and you are just pressing buttons, but mm-hmm. it's like you have a time limit. But then there's like just Ethan, depressed father, gets up and brushes his teeth. And there's not like, you can stand there all day and not, and it's actually really hilarious because if like you have to do the motion of like moving the control stick in a halfway arc and you don't do it all the way, you see Ethan like put the toothbrush to his face and then put it back. You just keep doing it. And like, I spent ages just like being an idiot who can't open a cupboard, basically.
It is interesting how many of his games will include little mundane things like that. Like, in Beyond, there's a thing where you just have to clean your apartment before a guy comes over.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Like, it's not...
Well, in Detroit, you also clean an apartment.
Yeah, there's some tension in that one, though.
Not really, though. That's really before the shit hits the fan.
That's true.
But so anyway, I just want to get it. So basically, but to go over, like, the general overview of what David Cage does is he makes these games. They're very cinematic. And they usually start with a very compelling story. And there's, like, a mixture of, like, good to shitty writing and character acting that's gotten better with time because he's gotten more clout somehow. I guess just because video games are getting more clout, and so now you can get, like, Clancy Brown to be in your video game.
Hans Henriksen.
Yeah.
Hans Henriksen, yeah.
Jesse Williams, like, who's right now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
On a regular basis, around 75% through the game's story, something with the story goes horrifically off the rails in a terrible way. So I'm probably going to end up, I guess this is like a spoiler warning officially, because I'm probably just going to go through the rapid fire and like spoil
I think we should.
A whole bunch of shit about these games. Probably the most egregious example was in Indigo Prophecy. It starts off as like a murder mystery where you play as a guy who was like seemingly possessed by some kind of cultist to kill someone. And so then you're like playing as him running away from the cops and also as the cops who are chasing him. And he's like, I don't know why. And it seems to be this like ritualistic Mayan sacrifice thing for some reason. And then like 75% through the game, you find out that he's like, he's got some kind of superpowers, which is like, okay, if we're still going with the Mayan sacrifice thing, clearly this is a supernatural world. But then the really insane thing happens is that there's, in addition to this, like, Mayan cult sect, there's another sect called, like, the Yellow Clan or the Purple Clan or something, and they're, like, the internet that has gone sentient and is also trying to, like, track down the same source of power. And there's a point in the game when you're, like, Dragon Ball Z-style fighting an avatar that represents the internet. That's where that game goes.
Would you say there's an equivalent of that kind of nutty twist in Detroit Become Human?
Yeah. So I'm going to go through that one, and I'm going to go through Heavy Rain first.
Okay.
So in I got, before I stop, I want to also mention that Indigo Prophecy, your character dies, but I guess because he's magical, he, like, is alive somehow still, and then he definitely, like, fucks a girl and gets pregnant. And she says,
the fuck?
Like, she says, like, wow, you're cold, which indicates to me that his body is, like, dead. And I'm like, why would you include that line? Can we just pretend that he came back to life and is a living being and she didn't just fuck a dead guy?
It, like, is a narrative choice to do that.
That was another highlight of the game for me. But in Heavy Rain, you play as, like, again, it's like a serial killer thing. And the dumb twist there is that they, like, set up really... That was just bad mystery writing, where they just set up very clearly this, like, idea that Ethan, the father whose son has been kidnapped by the serial killer, could be the serial killer himself. And they set up all these, like, things, like, it's the origami killer, and Ethan is making origami constantly, and you're like, okay. And they never explain why he's making origami.
Like, he took a class.
Yeah, they don't talk about it. They just show that he's, like, got all this origami on him at all times. Like, he's in his pocket, his therapist's office is like, yeah, you made origami and whatever. And then it turns out that actually, instead of him or anyone else, it's, like, one of the characters you play as is this private investigator who's been, like, working to, like, solve the crime. And it turns out that he's the killer.
The PI?
Yeah, the private investigator. And it's, like, really out of nowhere, and it's, like, it's a terrible choice, because, like, his story was going in a really compelling direction before then, and then it just turns out that he's, like, a nutso serial killer. And it just sort of, like, defies mystery writing rules.
101.
Yeah. And then, so you have Detroit. Detroit is a game about, like, in 2038 Detroit, where androids have been being made by this company, CyberLife, to, like, take over mundane human chores. And so, like, androids are everywhere. They're, like, 38... I think they're, like, 75% of the military, they say, in that game. And, like, there are housewife androids and, like, caretaker androids and construction worker androids that run all the stores and everything. And
there's, like, sex bot ones.
Of course there are. I mean, that's, like,
military
step one,
ones,
right? Like,
yeah.
Step one of, like, we made androids look like people.
Let's fuck them.
And so it starts off with, like, there's three main characters. The setup is that some of these androids are starting to go, like, quote-unquote deviant, where they don't want to follow orders, and they go nuts, and they kill or assault humans. And so it's like a prologue where you play as, like, Connor, who's, like, this prototype detective android who CyberLife has sent to, like, hunt down deviants, like, help the police, which is, like, a hard sell when your company is making faulty androids to be like, here's an android to help you find all the faulty androids.
It is a very compelling opening scene, though.
It is a good opening scene. And Connor is the best story in the game, so I'm not going to use that storyline too much. But it is also, like, it's also just ironic that the company is like, yeah, here's an android to help you solve your crazy android problem.
To fix the problem that our other androids have now made.
You also play as Marcus, who's, like, a caretaker android who has, like, a human, basically, like, has adopted him.
He's sent by the founder.
Yeah, but that's not relevant to this discussion.
He's sent to Lance Hendrickson as an assistant, right?
Because Lance Hendrickson is, like, an aging painter. And you can't, you know, he's in a wheelchair and he can't.
Caretaker.
Yeah.
His best friend.
Companion. Yeah. His son.
Robo son, perhaps.
And Lance Hendrickson has a real son who's an asshole and a drug addict. And, like, after an altercation where Marcus ends up, like, breaking his programming and punching the son because the son's threatening the dad. And he gets, like, thrown in, like, a robot dumpster.
Has this
rebirth and becomes a leader for, like, deviant or, like, free androids. And the last character he plays is Kara, who is a housekeeper / I guess also caretaker android, who was purchased by this guy, like, again, kind of like asshole human Todd, who's, like, an abusive drug addict father to his daughter Alice. And Kara has just been repaired from a quote-unquote car accident and is, like, early on revealed, like, no, that was just Todd beating shit out of Kara.
Right.
And Kara very quickly is in the situation where Alice's life is in danger from Todd, who's, like, about to go beat her, and she breaks her programming to rescue Alice, and they run away. So you've got, like, Kara on the run with the human Alice.
And her arc with Alice is, like, motherhood and,
it's
like,
Kara's whole arc is, like, they because that's the marketing material they hammer you in the head with, is, like, she's an empathetic person. And so she, like, can't help but, like, feel for Alice, and that's what breaks her programming. So you've got, like, that plot line where they're kind of running on the run, trying to find a safe place to be a family. Marcus is trying to, like, get, you know, like, basically free androids from slavery.
And unite the resistance.
And, yeah, unite the resistance. Basically, like, get them recognized. And you can choose to do it violently or peacefully with him. And Connor is paired up with this, like, drunk, washed-up detective named Hank, played by Clancy Brown. And Clancy Brown, like, hates androids, but quickly, like...
How do you know he hates androids, Lee?
Because he says it a bajillion times.
Like, oh, okay. So, I loved it,
What's
too.
On his desk, also, that implies he might hate androids, Lee?
Isn't it like a propaganda?
Yeah, it's like a bumper sticker or something.
And a hat, I think.
There was like an American flag that was like not on my wall right, or something, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I just love how every time the topic comes up, there's some form of the line, I hate androids, but I'm not telling you why.
Yeah, that's my reason.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Clancy Brown does an excellent job.
No, he does. And he actually does get some of the best lines in acting in the game. Like, yeah. It's very naturalistic for David Cage, I have to qualify it, because, like, I'm shocked that David Cage wrote such a naturalistic American movie. But yeah, your journey with Connor and Hank is that you're going to all these scenes where, like, androids are, demon androids are being reported, and as Connor, you get these decisions whether or not to, like, be lenient with them or let them go in certain cases, or you can, like, be Terminator style and just, like, do your job and be a good robot.
Well, and it builds to something, right? Because, like, each deviant he makes contact with, he's kind of learning a different dimension. They're all kind of reaching for humanity in different ways. Like, yeah. the one in the beginning, not in the first scene, but the
bird android?
The one who would get all the cigarette burns. That's when Connor realizes, oh, yes, he was violent, but it was in self-defense, and this was, like, a long pattern of abuse.
Oh, the first one from, yeah. The guy that was in he murdered his master.
Yes.
Out of self-defense, yeah. But yeah, basically, so there's, like, a few different unique mechanics, I guess, is there's, like, relationships that you build, and with Connor, there's, like, an additional thing where choices you make in the game either, like, endear you to Hank or... You also have, like, a sort of artificial intelligence handler named Amanda, who's, like, a cyber life program that is meant to keep you on the mission.
Yeah.
And so, generally, if you do things that cyber life doesn't want you to do, like, Amanda's not going to like you. It turns out Hank, despite his, like, anti-android lines that he, like, the plot line that he's given of, like, I have a dark past with androids. Like,
I can't tell you yet, though. It's not time.
Very quickly turns. Like, with every scene that you meet androids, he's like, oh, I'm shocked. These androids seem like humans. And, like, so, for the most part, actions that favor androids make endear you to Hank. There's other ways you can endear to Hank, like saving his life instead of going after someone.
Well, and you find, and I thought this was a really uncharacteristically good note for the character, was... what Hank responds to is empathy. If you are showing these androids who are experiencing human problems empathy, he tends to really go for that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the sense that you're supposed to get is that Hank... I mean, again, like, before this whole thing happened, like, androids didn't go deviant, and so they were very robotic. But, like, I think Hank is reacting to, like, seeing androids show emotions, and he's, like... Unlike a lot of other people who are like, straight up, this is aberrant, he's like, oh, that's weird. I didn't think androids could show emotions. They seemed like humans.
Right.
Which is like good. His arc plays up pretty well. Like, his and Connor's are the best. But the game has a huge amount of problems.
Well,
so I have to say,
yeah.
As someone who didn't play this game at all, watched you play it for, you know, an hour or so.
Yep.
On paper, a lot of this sounds fairly good to me. It sounds fairly engaging. These three stories sounds like they could join up in an interesting fashion toward the end.
Yeah.
So, where did it all go wrong, Lee?
So, all right.
Also, side question. Does Connor like dogs?
I like dogs.
That scene.
So, we're referencing... I actually watched this. Brian Deshard, who plays Connor, did a live stream of where he played the game. And he got to this scene where, like, you first meet Hank, you've studied his desk, and you find that he has a dog, he listens to death metal, he doesn't like androids, he likes the baseball, the basketball team.
He likes the sports.
The Gears, aren't they called?
Yeah, and then so Hank sits down, and you're, like, trying to, your objective is, like, try to
build
a relationship.
Befriend Hank.
And you can ask him about all these things, or you ask him about dogs, he's like, I hear you have a dog, and he's like, how do you know that? He's like, well, your dog has a new chair. And he's like, oh. And then Connor just goes, I like dogs.
What is your dog's name?
And Brian Deshart is, by the way, an amazing actor in this game. And
I would say next to Clancy Brown, he's turning.
Yeah,
the best
performance. They're the best performances, and that's why their plotline is one of the best. But like, he really nails this tone of like, he nails it when he's being an android delivering like sort of prepped lines. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, scripted lines?
Yes.
And he nails it when he's, like, not sure. When he's breaking through, like, there are moments where he doesn't have a scripted line and he doesn't know what to say. And he walks this fine line of, like, portraying a robot, but also the only robot in the game, the only android in the game who you really watch, like, come out as a human. Everyone else pretty much acts human from the start, like, even Marcus.
That's something I wanted to bring up, actually. That's why I found his performance to be so interesting, because I feel like he at all times was playing, but I'm still an android.
Yeah.
Kara and Marcus are human immediately,
pretty much. You never really believe that they're not. I mean, Kara, like, again, Kara and Marcus, when they're in with Carl, the painter, and when they're with, like, Todd and Alice in the beginning, they do act, like, pleasant, I guess, is the word, and that's presumably how you'd want an android to act, and so it doesn't necessarily, like, that's just, you know, I'm sure that you'd want a housekeeper android to have some level of fake humanity to them. And so it could be read that, like, they are more human when they are showing more extreme emotions or things like that, but they don't, it's different with Connor, who has this very professional, like buttoned up attitude where everything is very formal and he's very stiff, and it plays off much better as, like, this android that really doesn't, like, he's it faking emotions at first. He's faking it until he makes it.
But there's something also, it's so, Brian Deschard agrees, it's the best line, just because the I like dogs thing, because it's simultaneously doing the whole, like, robot.
I get to that part of the reference, but yeah, like.
But, like, robot trying to be human.
Yeah.
But also there's, like, a really endearing childlike aspect to it.
Yeah,
of just,
Connor,
like,
best boy.
He's best boy.
Must protect.
I mean, it's a simple line, too, is the other thing. It allows you to read a lot into it. You can read what you want into this. He can express emotions into it. It's not quite heavy-handed.
Right.
It's just something that allows him to, you know, show you a little bit more about his personality than saying something more overt about him being a robot.
Well, and it's not crazy and melodramatic. Like, you fucking trying to steal our jobs, bitch!
Yeah.
Which, like, is happening all over this game.
Or when you, as Marcus, one of the first things you can do is, like, walk, you get by paint, and you walk by a preacher, and the preacher's like, I see the devil in you!
I see you, demon!
Yeah, I see you, demon.
Just like, wow!
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe one of the major problems with this. Outside of Connor and Hank's storyline, everything is an anvil being dropped on you at all times.
So, but that's not it. Like, so let me first explain in a general sense where the plots go and why it goes wrong from a structural point of view. And then we can get into how bad he is at writing.
Okay, sure.
But, like, straight up from a structural point of view, the big problems with Marcus is that it's incredibly binary. Like, there's no middle ground.
None.
And, like, being peaceful means more people get killed. Like, more of your friends get killed. It also, like, there's basically, like, two people in the revolution beside you, North and Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, like, if you go peaceful, Josh likes you. And if you go aggressive, North likes you. And they hate you if you do the opposite. Like, you get, you, like, it's like this. It's like the scale that just tips this way. Like, you get peaceful, you lose points with Josh. You're with North, you gain points with Josh. And it's, like, reversed the other way. And there are still ways to, like, keep them both, I guess, like, liking you.
There's not much middle ground, though.
There's no middle ground. It's all, it's the game. This David Cage likes to tell that his games are like, there's so many choices, and you really affect the story. And at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know, it's hard. I don't know how many people really that fell for this smokescreen in this game, because it's really easy to see through it all and be like, okay, well, basically at the end of the day, it's peaceful or aggressive. Like,
yeah.
There's like a different dialogue if I say this versus this, and like there's a 5-extra-minute cutscene if I do this because I triggered a fight, and after that fight, it just leads back into. And they actually show you the story flow chart. And there are some nice, like, I think they're the choice and the different, like, the things you unlock with the flow chart are, like, insightful. And it's interesting to see, like, how things can play out. But that's the journey, not the destination. The destinations are pretty limited at the end of the day. And with Marcus, it really is, like, just not that, like, it's and also it's boring. Like, Marcus as a character is not that, like, developed beyond, like, a martyr figure.
It's also, I would say, the tropiest of the storylines in terms of, like, you can look at this and be like, this is very straightforward hero's journey kind of robo-Christ thing happening.
Yeah, pretty much. The biggest problem with Alice and Kara, so there's two big problems. They're the shittiest plot. The one big problem is that they have, like, nothing to do with the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Like, you're directly seeking Jericho as Connor and Hank. Like, Jericho's the like, base of all the free androids where Marcus is with. Like, Connor leads directly to Andrew, like, Marcus. There's, like, a confrontation and everything. Meanwhile, like, I think Connor meets, depending on if you do an investigation the right way, you could end up at, like, finding Kara, like, where Kara went one night, and you could trigger a chase scene where Connor chases Kara and Alice, and they either get away, or she dies.
Yeah.
Or Connor dies. Or both of them die. And that's the only time they meet until, like, the very end of the game, where basically Kara ends up, she's going all these different places, like, can you get me out of Detroit? Can you get me out of Detroit with Alice? And she ends up going to this, like, human woman, Rose, who helps gets androids into Canada. And Rose is like, you need to go see Marcus. Marcus will get you a passport, blah, blah, blah. And so Kara and Alice end up at Jericho, see Marcus, and Marcus is like, yeah, it's really shitty right now, so you might have a hard time getting out, but here's a passport. That's the moment where, like, all three of them are in Jericho, because Connor's closing on Marcus. Or he's not, depending on if you're really shit at investigating things.
Yeah.
But potentially, like, that's when humans attack Jericho, and so Connor or Alice and Kara have to, like, flee with the rest of Jericho. And if you, as Connor, found her earlier, that's the second time in the game that you see Kara, where you can basically apologize for chasing her earlier, and that's it.
But you're right, her plotline doesn't intersect with the other two.
Yeah,
much
and
at
then
all.
After that, like, you know, the rest of the game proceeds to be, like, the Android Revolution, whereas Kara and Alice are just still trying to get the fuck out and go to Canada. So they're having their own little story. The other bad thing about that story, is this really... This is sort of like the David Cage shit reveal, that you find out...
Oh, this, it made me crazy.
You find out in Jericho that Alice is a robot.
She's been an android the whole time.
She's an android child.
Why?
Can we actually break down the mechanics of this twist just a little? Because I was thinking about this earlier.
I can tell you because I know like why how it all went down.
Like I just mean from like a narrative standpoint, the twist is deployed.
Yeah.
And they set it up a little when there's like a third character, Luther, who you meet earlier in Kara's story.
Yeah, he's like, can we talk about Alice? There's something you should know about Alice. You like looked at Alice and she's like, no.
Well, and you're supposed to kind of think like, oh, she hasn't been eating. And she doesn't seem to want to sleep. Like, there's a lot of weird shit like that happening.
She does do that. So she kind of fakes those things, though.
Right. And then there comes the reveal at Jericho that Alice is an android because Kara sees another Alice there. And she's like, oh, but then immediately Luther is there to be like, it doesn't matter. This doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything. And then you as a character can then decide, no, it doesn't change anything. So
you can actually decide like, fuck this android kid.
What happens if you decide that?
Then you get away and you leave her.
Really?
Attacking Jericho.
All right then.
Well, so my problem with it is I don't see what the point of the twist is if you're immediately going to have a third party chiming in to tell you how little it matters. I also find it to be...
By the way, again, we have to have a character come in and say, held on show, it doesn't matter that Alice is an android, it matters that you found each other and you're a family.
Well, but it's... The other problem with that, though, is I find it to be the least interesting story choice they could have made. I think it's more interesting of having a human and an android interacting in a more meaningful way.
Yeah.
But also, as Lee pointed out, it's confounding to think that one of CyberLife's products is literally an android that we'll need.
Yeah, I mean, granted, like, we're told that this company is, like, evil corporation 101, but, like, the messaging around a product of, like, here's a disposable child that you can pretend to love for a couple of years and then throw in the garbage when you don't want it anymore, because it's never going to grow up. It's just like basically it's a line of like, this is the perfect child. It's like it's a human Tamagotchi is what
right.
It is.
So why does her dad have an Alice?
So
gosh.
Todd did have a wife and did have a daughter,
okay.
But the wife left and took the daughter with him.
So he got
a robot
daughter?
Kid.
Okay.
Then he couldn't take care of a robot kid, which has no real need.
I was going to say, like, how can you not take care of a robot kid? What does he need?
And so the kid is programmed to need things.
On the other side of that issue is... Why did he want a daughter just so there could be someone else he could just ignore? Like, he doesn't seem to want her around.
Well, he does. If you don't... I killed Todd in the first scene I could, but I didn't really mean to. That's just how it played out. But if you don't kill Todd, he actually shows up again. You can get him to confess and apologize.
Oh.
To what happened. But he basically says, like, he wanted, like... To feel like he could, like, he wanted, I don't know, he's a terrible person, and he's a drug addict and a horrible man, but he did, the intention behind him getting a robot Alice, was to, like, fill the void of having his real daughter taken away.
Yeah.
But, like, Alice, in the game, she purposely doesn't tell Kara she's an android because she's afraid that Kara won't love her if she finds out that she's an android. Which is, that's a fine, that's, I don't see anything wrong with that character choice, but what is dumb is just that it's using android at all.
Like, yeah.
It takes away the story. Basically, what you're left with at the end of the day is the only, in this game about, like, androids reaching sentience and their tensions with humanity, the only plot line that involves significant interaction between androids and humans is Connor and Hank.
What are the cognitive abilities of a robot child?
Again, this is why I have this problem on Westworld, man, but anywhere you have robot kids, it's like, what a shitty, like, what? My first reaction when I found out Alice was an android, I was like, well, let's just shoot her now. Like, what a shitty existence. Like, you're just 12 forever.
But that's, it's like, is she emotionally 12?
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. She's definitely emotionally 12. I don't, she probably is actually, her brain probably processed things much better than a human 12-year-old brain could, but.
Okay.
She's like, Mom, I'm scared. Like, why don't people like us? And by the way, the other reason that plotline really fails is that, like, Alice is, like, a soulless being, basically. Like, she's just a need-want machine for the rest of the game. And there's no, like, unlike Connor and Hank, where they're both full-fledged characters, and you can see that from their interaction. You see them interacting and bonding. All you really see with Kara is you see Alice be like, I need something, and then Kara's like, I'll give it to you, and that's the relationship. Like,
well, and I will say, there were moments where Kara's devotion to Alice was compelling. It's, like, it wasn't totally void of pull.
Kara is a better character than Alice. Alice is basically like, I don't know, like
an object.
We got out, like, the 5-year-old child asset from, like, shitty stereotypes, and we popped it into this robot.
The thing is,
I'm having some weird issues with the fact that, okay, so it's like, what, 12 years old, you said something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. It has, like, the cognitive levels of a human 12-year-old, but it also knows it's a robot.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why would you make it do that? Why would you either just, like, have it not know it's a robot at all, or why would you not just, like, have, like, ostensibly, it could, you know, have the cognitive abilities of an adult.
Well, I mean,
but it's just, it's formatted to be a child.
Again, the idea with these things is that they're not really supposed to know that they're robots, in the sense that they're not supposed to have feelings.
But it seems like, but it seems like all the other characters that I saw, at least, knew they were robots. It's not like it was a shock to them.
They do, like, they definitely do, but I feel like, whereas Kara is, an undeviant Kara would be like, I am an android, I am here to help you. The child is programmed not to admit that it's a robot, because it's programmed to make a parent feel like they have a real child.
They're
just
so weird.
They actually say that in the manual for the child robot, that they have, so robots are mandated to have, like, the LED display on their forehead, so that everyone knows it's a robot, right. But the child androids have the option to hide it, so that you can feel like it's a real kid.
I don't know, it's just weird. It's weird to me just that it has that it knows it's a robot. I feel like you would sidestep a lot of these issues if the robot child was designed to not know it was a robot.
I also think
just going back to it, it's a stupid twist.
It's a stupid twist
for the sake of a twist, because just thinking about it now,
yeah,
it's an extremely dumb thing to happen out of nowhere.
Well, and it's also, it doesn't resolve anything that was really building in the story very much. It actually is sort of a reversal that, especially when you're going to have someone tell you how little it matters, what was the point?
We did that thing about plot twist. This is like a twist that doesn't do anything for the story. It's just like, it's introducing an orange where you were telling an apple story.
Yeah. Right? Well, but you still like the orange.
It could have also,
you liked the apple, but now you also like the orange as well. So what was the point?
I do sort of like this idea of potentially there being a message in here about how, like, parents could potentially commodify their children, or, like, why do we have children if not to have these things? But David Cage never spends longer than, like, 5 seconds on a single fodder issue, so we don't get that.
It's potentially more interesting to me if you knew she was a robot from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, I guess we can, we can go into the heavy-handedness of David Cage's writing now. And what I'll start with is, I killed Kara, Luther, and Alice in my game, because I did very badly.
I forget.
So Luther, you didn't meet him, but after Kara escapes the first shit situation she's in, she ends up
in another one.
She ends up with this guy who claims to free androids, but he's just selling them for parts.
Okay.
He lures them there to sell them, and there's, like, a construction worker, big guy named Luther, who's a construction android, who he's programmed to be his, like, slave, basically. Mm-hmm. But if you do it right, like, you free all of the, you basically get that guy killed. you free all of his crazy mutated androids and Luther, and mm-hmm. Luther joins you and Kara, and see, it's sort of like they become like a family unit.
Mm-hmm.
You also, one of my favorite things in Kara's story, which was a good one that I liked, a good scene, was you find an abandoned, like, carnival, like a kid park, like a carnival, like, not like, it's like a mini one, but it's like some sort of permanent carnival setup,
mm-hmm.
and it's run by a bunch of, like, similarly, they're all the same model android, and they refer to themselves as the Jerrys. Like, they say, we are Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're the Jerrys. And they all look the same, and they all have, like, this weird hive mind. And they're actually really cool, and a couple of them come back later on. But they have this weird thing where they are all the same person, and they're just, like, so happy that, like, people are at this dead carnival. Like, they're like, oh my god, a child is here. We can make the child happy. And it's creepy for a second, and they find out, no, they just wanted to see people again. And they were at least, like, if you're going to dance around all these different ideas, they were at least an interesting one. That they mm-hmm. were, like, cool with the fact that they all looked the same and had the same, like, name / being. But they also were, like, they were, like, this just chill hive mind robot.
One, like...
group.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I ended up doing is I failed to escape Detroit. And by the end of the game, there's so many androids have gone deviant that the government has decided it's time to round them all up. And put them in camps.
Oh boy.
Just why?
This is too subtle. For
recycling. And so I ended up in an android concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you go into they shuffle you into these, like, rooms, and they make you take off your human clothes, like, your clothes and, like, your fake skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you're just, like, naked, like, white, just like a bunch of mannequin looking
mm-hmm.
androids. And then you're just standing like that, like, in the snow, and they basically shuffle you into, like, the equivalent of gas chambers for androids. Which is like recycling chambers where they disassemble you for parts.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't die in the recycling chamber, but I tried to escape and I got us all killed. But that was probably the most egregious scene. And in a sort of unsettling recurring thing for David Cage, like, it is Kara that all of these things happen to.
Yep.
It's the female character that gets all of the, like, agency robbing, horrifying scenes.
Tied up, menace.
Yeah, tied up to, like, get her memory reset.
In Beyond Two Souls, it's not, I wouldn't necessarily call it worse, but they kind of distilled that all into one scene where you are playing as Ellen Page and you have to fight off a gang rape at a bar.
There's
and you're like, why the fuck is this in a game?
You play as a journalist, and one of the first things that happened to her is, unrelated to anything else that happens in the game, she has a dream about her home getting invaded by a bunch of guys. And so, it's just a dream she has, and it's not even about anything. It's just like, let's watch this woman, let's play as this woman fending off, like, people trying
attackers.
To attack her.
There's probably something also to be said for the fact that the biggest female character in this story is the one doing the, like, the motherly thing.
The nurturing.
Yeah, Cage is not a great...
Yeah, clearly
and
not.
And his defense when he's approached with things like that is like, I have people like Ellen Page in my games.
Right, yeah.
Like, I have friends. Yeah,
couch points.
And Jesse, what's his face? Who plays
Jesse Williams? Well, and I think there was also, I think there was a clear attempt. I think it was intentional hiring Jesse Williams to play this character, who you're then going to also attach the most racialized
things
in there.
Horribly heavy-handed.
It's very heavy-handed,
and not addressed. Really.
You see, the androids all are in the back of the bus.
Yep.
He has a extremely heavy-handed Ferguson moment where everyone's hands are up at this rally while police are pointing guns at them, and it's like
you can decide if you want to do that. You can decide to do a few different things, but hands up is one of them.
Yeah. Well, and like I think that's intentional. I also think.
Intentional and not great, not executed well.
Well, I would say, like, the intention is good, right? I'm like, okay, yeah, I think this is an issue you can crack into. But he is so unsubtle and so lacking in restraint. And I also wonder to what extent, is this your story to tell, David Cage?
Again, that's the whole thing with his binary plotline. It's like, let me show you that when you do these, like, police are bad. Look how bad they are. When you do peaceful, they shoot you anyway.
Well, and it's also like... In Kara's storyline, hey, isn't a domestic abuse terrible? Or it's like he never, what bugs me I think the most is he never actually digs into these issues and explores them with any kind of dimension. It's just sort of like, look at this! Anyway,
it turns out, like, what dimension could you even get into with that if Alice is not even a real fucking kid, not even his kid. I guess what kind of relationship would she even have with Todd other than, like, she was purchased by him a couple of years ago?
It just annoys me that there's so many broad strokes happening and nothing that you really can, like, really get into. Or, that's why I also found, like, again, like, moments in Marcus's story has really got me. Like, I loved watching the whole...
March one?
No, when you drive the truck into the CyberLife store and free all of the androids, and then you're kind of, like, tagging the plaza with all these different slogans and whatnot. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
And
the slogans are also really heavy-handed.
Yeah, they are. But
literally, you can type "We have a dream" on the walls.
In a way that felt believable to a certain extent. I don't know. I thought that worked more than it didn't. But Marcus's story in general is so, look at this. Look at these obvious symbols. Look at these obvious references. And it's just beating you in the face with this shit.
Yeah. But they don't get into anything. They don't get into, like, they don't draw any, like, more than surface level parallels with racism and, like, setting it in Detroit even. Like, you kind of, like, you know you did that on purpose, but then you don't do anything with that.
No.
Like,
or
except Rose at one point has a line where she's like, well, my people were once.
I was just about to bring that up.
Rose is a black woman.
I thought that was really unfortunate phrasing.
Yeah.
Again, I was like, David Cage.
She says the words, my people.
My people. I was like, David Cage, people. You are not the person to put those words in that character's mouth.
Yeah.
And literally, the whole line is like, because I think Kara asks her, like, why are you doing this? She's like, it wasn't that long ago that my people had to go through this. And it's like, wow.
Right? Really, it was really
it's like
gross.
Clunk.
Yeah.
I also thought, and this was a rare weak moment for the Connor and Hank storyline, but when they go to the sex club, and the entire point of that episode, as far as I could tell, was, oh my God, can you believe these two sex bots are lesbians?
Exactly. Of course, David Cage.
And it's true love. It was just like, it felt very much like he thought this was something wild and crazy and new.
Look
when
how
I was like,
LGBT friendly I am. I'm a lesbian in my game. Just so that you could see them in their fucking underwear for 20 minutes.
Standing next to each other. Yeah. Like, it was. I don't think he intends it to be this way, but it comes across as very tokenized
a
lot of the time.
By the way, sex androids are wearing, like sports bras and briefs.
like boy shorts.
The men are wearing boxers, and the women's are, like, they're wearing, like, CyberLife sports bras and briefs. Like, the most unsexy underwear you can
It's athletic, for sure.
Yeah, like, it's just so weird. So I want to talk about...
There's also world details I think we should also go to.
But I want to talk about the good stuff.
Yeah.
Because we're already at 41 minutes.
Okay, yeah, so we should...
I want to talk about... Because I don't want to underwrite that I played this game to completion. I replayed some of it. I watched a lot of it. And it just... The reason I wanted to talk about it is because I think it is so close to being a really good game. And maybe if they just stuck with Connor and done, like, less other characters or... just beefed his story. He does get the most scenes in the game.
Or honestly, something you said earlier, maybe it was yesterday, but you made the comparison between David Cage and George Lucas in terms of, like, just someone needs to be in there, like, steering the ship.
But he's never going to give the control. He's unlike George Lucas in that George Lucas, I think, was happy to let other people take over his ideas at certain points, whereas David Cage, and I don't know about Lucasfilm, but that's possibly him too. Like, I don't think he would ever be like, trust someone else to make big decisions.
The difference also, I think, with George Lucas is George Lucas was always telling very simple, straightforward stories. And
that's
like,
true.
There's not like a whole lot. I mean, there's subtext there, but it's not like quite as heavy-handed as this is. David Cage seems to be like, he has something he wants to say in mind and then builds an entire story around that and like reverse engineers it from
and
there.
And perhaps that's why Heavy Rain is maybe a little bit... Maybe if I had to say overall, the story's a little bit better because it is just like a serial killer thing, and there's no mind cults, and there's no attempt to deliver a message.
Maybe that's what he needs to do, right? Like he just needs to do like something very. There's no shame in doing a straightforward story without any deeper message to it.
There is something I want to commend here, though, and I mean, as faulty as it is, I do want to commend the fact that David Cage is trying to be like, look, we can use video games to say things and to tell complicated stories and to tell very cinematic, gorgeous, beautiful, interactive stories that are also paying attention to mundane things that you're doing throughout the day. I found that to be really interesting. It's just what we got was...
It's like that
needs
that
work.
Episode of Futurama where Leela is the first woman to play Blurn's ball, but she's really terrible at it. It's like, you know, like, yes, you are breaking barriers, but you're doing it horribly.
Yeah. So, I want to talk. So, what David Cage has always done well is he does do these really great set pieces, and there are a few really great ones in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Connor, I think, again, gets the most. I don't think you guys were there. We were all there, rather, when I had to chase down the bird android guy.
No.
It was did show me that, though.
It was really good. So there's, like, and there was a scene pretty early on with Connor's story where you have to, like, investigate this abandoned apartment full of pigeons, and you find out that an android's basically been, like, feeding a bunch of pigeons there. And you, like, he's in the apartment, it turns out, so if you find him, he, like, bolts, and it triggers this, like, cutscene where, like, Hank is like, go chase him, and you have to chase him across, like, basically...
roofs!
An urban... There's, like, this urban rooftop farming project, mm-hmm. and it's kind of, like, a cool setting and concept that, like, across all of the skyscraper tops and rooftops in Detroit, there are now, like, there's now farmland, or, like, reclaiming them for farms. And so you're going across all these, like, weird greenhouses and, like, farm and, like, cornfields and shit, and it's such a well... Like, the cinematography is so amazing of, like, you just running, and it doesn't... Unless you really want it to look awkward, it doesn't. Like, you run and the camera knows how to position itself to look really good. And then you'll, like, jump and then it'll trigger the reverse camera so it watch you, like, slide down. And then you hit X, you jump on top of a train. And there's a really cool one where, like, you kind of miss him as he's running out through a door and the door closes and you can't get to the door in time. So Connor, like, runs. It triggers a sort of, like, you're still playing. You still feel you're controlling, but it triggers this camera where Connor runs and, like, puts his hands up against the window to kind of see where he's going, and the camera kind of follows behind, so, like, you're, like, it's an over-the-shoulder view, and then you go up like this, and the camera, like, zooms in and shows, like, the window, mm-hmm. and then the camera rotates seamlessly so that you can then run sideways out the other door to go
It's very
him.
Natural, and it's really amazing. I think it must have been very technically difficult to nail that.
And again, along with this, the music is really great for all three characters, I think. They did nail, like, three distinct... I watched, like, a little behind the scenes about it, too. Like, there are different composing teams for everyone's story, and, like, they... Connor's is very, like, electric and, like, in synthetic, whereas Connor... Like, they went for Marcus, they went with, like, a kind of church face, like, a hymnal-style thing.
Of course.
Because the heavy-handed Christ...
Allegories
they were playing there... and Kara has this really good, like, evocative string theme that keeps going back, like, and it escalates during, like, the more troubling scenes. And they're all really good, pieces. They're all really good soundtracks. The Connor and Hank bromance is
so good.
Some of the finest video game.
I was drawn in completely.
Writing I've ever seen. Yeah. The way it plays out is really great. I wish that I'd done the scene where you find Hank drunk at home when everyone was there.
That was so good.
The first night I got this game, like, I actually invited, as I've done in the past, like, all of my friends have gathered and we've played Heavy Rain, or we actually played all of Heavy Rain together. And we would all take turns with the controllers. I refused to let anyone else play as my favorite character in that game because I didn't want them to get him killed. But they're really fun interactive experiences. You do actually get wrapped up in it when, like, again, these interactive set pieces come in where it's like, oh my god, I have 10 minutes before something happens. Like, there's something, he knows when to start a timer in the game.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he knows when putting a timer on is going to make you go, fuck!
With Kara's, when you're, like, hiding at Rose's house and the cops come, and you have to hide,
like,
android presence.
There's, like, a 30-second timer, and it's like, hide the evidence of Anders in the house, and you're like, oh, I don't even know where
fuck,
it is.
Fuck doors!
Yeah, it was really bad.
But yeah, the drunk scene is so good because it's another example of Connor sees something that we, the player / viewer, know, like, oh, that's just Hank passed out drunk
Hank's
on the floor.
Connor sees, like, a passed out Hank through the window of house that he can't get into. And he just, like, triggers this, like, well, got to break into the house. And he, like, breaks the window and jumps in. And he's like, oh,
you're unconscious.
Not. Yeah. And you see his dog. And then if you learned what the dog's name was, you know, you automatically calm the dog down. If you don't, you have to, like, try to calm the dog down, but you don't know his name, so it's harder.
I also loved the scene by the food truck where Hank is paying off, like, a bookie or something, or he's, like, placing a bet.
Yeah, he's placing a bet with an illegal gambling guy, like, a bookie, basically, and he's doing some illegal gambling, and, like, Connor can scan his friend and be like, this guy's an illegal gambler. He also scans the food truck's health license and finds out that it's, like, an expired health license, and he scans his burger and finds out that his burger's out of calories, and then he's going over to eat his burger, and you can be like, you know, your food has, like, all of the calories for a daily meal and three times the amount of sodium.
But it never comes across as nagging.
He's
really
just trying to be helpful.
It's just so cute.
He's a helpful boy.
I think your friend is up to illegal activity.
I hate to alarm you, but I think your friend is doing some illegal gambling. But yeah, and then actually, like, depending on what you say, you can trigger, like, you can really, like, see the sort of cracks starting to form in that scene. Because that's the first time you have, like, a real conversation with him. Because the first time, when you ask him about his dog and shit, it always ends in Hank, like, throwing up against the wall and being like, do what
get
I said!
Get the fuck out of my face!
Yeah. And then after that, it can really open things up.
I want to, kind of off of that, just generally applaud the voice acting in mocap. It's all really good. They all I think all the actors, at least the mains, were
they're all mo-capped.
And I thought it was really beautiful. Like, it never, at least for me, reached Uncanny Valley. The only issue, as you pointed out, was Kara hugging Alice never quite looked natural.
No one, people, like, polygons touching polygons is always going to look like that.
Yeah.
In a video game. Like, if there's, contact has never been made. It was, at least he didn't do a sex scene in this game.
That's true.
Because the one in Heavy Rain was so bad.
Well, but it was, and I thought even, you know, our criticism about the writing aside, I thought the actors did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I really like Lance Hendrickson's character before he got killed.
Yeah. He doesn't have to die in that scene, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I killed him.
Well, you didn't kill him.
I know, but my actions indirectly got him killed. Yeah, but even if he doesn't die, he ends up, like, on his deathbed. But you can come back and visit him later on.
That's what I thought was really cool, though. It always looked amazing, even, like, through the good and the bad, it looked...
Yeah.
But beautiful.
It is a beautiful-looking game.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Some of the cutscenes are amazing.
Yeah.
The one, like, the Hank and Connor story really does have this, like, robots and murderer Isaac Asimov feel that I am all about.
Yep.
I wish that the rest of the stories had caught up with it.
Well, and like you said, it's the only one that focuses meaningfully on android and human interaction, which I thought was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I wish there was more of that.
Yep. And it can play out very differently. If you go the other way around, like, what's interesting is that Hank always ends up pro-android. But Connor doesn't necessarily end up that way. Connor can end up very faithful to his programming. And if you do, then you end up, like, on a rooftop getting ready to assassinate Marcus. And Hank comes to stop you. And you have to fight Hank. All right, well, that's all I got to say about this, I guess. I talked about it. It wasn't very structured, but I just had to get my thoughts out.
Yeah, oh, I appreciate that you did. I had, when you said you wanted to do this, I realized I had a lot more thoughts about it. So if you had to give this a letter grade, what would you give it?
I'm going to be too forgiving with it. Because I have to be. Because I just... The first trailer they announced for that game was the Connor trailer. And I was like, well, that's what I'm into.
Here we go.
Another David Cage game, because this plays into everything I'm into. So I don't know. I'd probably have to give it like a B+. And that's way more than it deserves.
Just on the strength of...
Yeah.
Of Connor.
On the strength of Connor.
An A+ and a C of like a C-.
Yeah.
Anywho, that was great. I'm glad we got to discuss some David Cage and Detroit Become Human.
Yeah.
Come back to us in 2 weeks when we're going to have our episode about Valerian. As always, you can find us at YWatch on Facebook and...
Facebook.com/YWatchPodcast.
And?
www.draftpack.com.
Perfect. So until next time, everyone. Bye!